This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
I don't think we're going to be the most popular the way things are going at the moment, but maybe that's something that we've been used to that over my career with different teams. So maybe that can be some extra motivation for us. In terms of anything that happens on the field, there are clear FIFA guidelines for how you have to report incidents and how you have to deal with things. But also, I don't think we should just talk about racism in Russia. You know, we've got to get our own house in order. There's still things going on in our own country that aren't correct around racism. So we keep pointing the finger at Russia, where we're going to be guests in the next couple of months. But we haven't resolved the issue in our own country. And until we do, I think we should stop firing off those things elsewhere. There's been no suggestion that we won't go to the tournament. The thing that's uppermost in our mind is security and safety. Again, we have no concerns about that. So we're just preparing. I mean, we're actually enjoying the week. It's been great to get the players back together. Important week for us in terms of tactical preparation, a chance to embed ideas ahead of the summer, to look at new players, to look at some players in different roles. So, you know, these two games are important learnings for us.
Thank Friday, it's football on BFM 89.9.
He's ever so eloquent, isn't he? A bit dishy as well. England boss Gareth Southgate, so I've been told.
Mate, I worry about you.
England boss Gareth Southgate, speaking ahead of their tie with the Netherlands. A whole bunch of friendlies happening tonight. Hello, I'm Ross. This is the Friday show. Thank Friday, it's football. In the studio with me, Gogland here.
Hello.
Hello, Gogs. Nicholas Arnold's also here.
What's up, Ross?
And Keishnan from Football Tribe.
Gloomy, gloomy Friday, Ross.
Ooh.
We know why.
Tweet the guys at BFM Radio. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Follow us on Facebook. Give our page a like. Why don't you? It's football on BFM. We'll talk about England and all that later on. Couple of friendlies took place yesterday. We should mention that Ryan Giggs is off to a flyer as Wales manager. They're playing a little tournament, the China Cup in China, beat China 6-0. Gareth Bale scored a hat-trick. He's now the record goal scorer for Wales. Ryan Giggs said he was more nervous about this than any time as a player.
And that's fair. The expectation of international football is usually a lot more. Because international football is when the regular non-football watchers also start to watch football because of patriotism. So the pressure is obviously a lot more. And in Ryan Giggs' case, this is his first proper job in managerial position.
Big job.
And it's a big job because Wales, expectations are high in Wales after what they did at Euro 2016. Yeah. And even if they didn't qualify for the World Cup, there's still a feel-good vibe about the squad. And they've got players to turn up on the international level as well. So this was a big test, and he started on a positive note.
That's what I mean. So Ryan Giggs has inherited the best generation of Welsh footballers for a long time, right?
Yeah, none more so than Gareth Bale, which obviously is going to be his focal point in the build-up to the World Cup and, of course, during the World Cup. But just looking at that game, I think Giggs had it easy. This time, his debut against a very, very lackluster China team. You know, pretty much, I think among the six goals, Wales pretty much almost walked four of the goals into the net. You know, it was just that easy against them.
So my question here is, how can China be so poor? I mean, if they're paying your Carlos Tevez's, what, $1 million a week or something to play in your league, how come your national team is?
I think we spoke about this in a previous shows, and when the whole Chinese league was exploding and everything, and this is going to backfire. And I mean, it is. We had the same problem back in the day, right? When you get all these foreigners come in, it's not going to translate into your national team immediately, even in the short term. And I mean, with Lippi there and all, 6-0 is a bit too much also for a home team. You know, China is no pushover. Let's put it this way.
But yeah, and the fact that I think they have realized that they have overspent on a lot of players.
Just a
little bit.
Not that much.
So what they've tried to do is they've tried to cut back on the spending. The government has sort of curved imposed a tax, 100% tax on signings that goes
supposedly,
above 7 million.
Yeah, whatever you pay abroad, you pay the equivalent for grassroots football, supposedly. Yeah.
Yes.
I wonder how much of that.
And they've also included a lot of... they made it mandatory for clubs to include under-23 players into the squad. But I'm just thinking if it's a little bit too late, because now China have to play catch-up to the rest of Asia and of course, the world. Mm. They haven't won since September last year, and Lippi hasn't been going all that great. So, I don't know, maybe the lack of growing their local players organically has now perhaps come to backfire?
I think the real development that's happening in... And I know everyone talks about the Chinese Super League because it's at the forefront of the press on a daily basis. But the real change that's happening in China is actually at the grassroots level, because they actually have made significant amount of investment in bringing in foreign coaches, establishing grassroots at every club. Corporations are given a tax break if they actually support football. So more and more big companies in China, your Alibabas and your manufacturing companies, are getting into youth development. So for us to see the fruit of that, you need to wait at least another 10 years. For the time being, they think CSL is obviously the right model forward.
Yep.
Though obviously the jury is out on that, given the result that they had.
Okay.
So that means the golden generation is just coming...
Correct,
in another 10, 15 years.
The ones that will benefit and hopefully they're good enough to take it through. All right, well, Wales are now through to the final of the China Cup, which will be played on Monday, and they will face either Uruguay or the Czech Republic, who are facing off tonight, apparently. All right, well, if China are lagging behind in world football development, closer to home then... Yesterday, Malaysia played a friendly game against the 189th ranked Mongolia team.
Yeah.
It was our new coach, Tan Cheng Ho's first game in charge. Twice we took the lead. Twice we were pegged back. It ended 2-2. Quite frankly, not good enough, because you've got to be beating teams below you in the ranking. It doesn't help us in any way. It's done wonders for Mongolian football. They're celebrating it, apparently.
In Mongolia, this is their first ever official point from a FIFA A international friendly. They have won points in FIFA sanctioned tournaments, but in an official A class friendly game, they've never won a point before. So last night was the first, and it's a huge result. But you know why this is depressing for Malaysians? This is depressing because we're better than that. We're way, way better than what we saw on the pitch last night. That was the most frustrating part. Because on paper, we have quality. You had Nacho Insa, the former Levante midfielder, making his national debut last night after being naturalized. 9 out of the 11 players that started were JDT players, players from the reigning league champions. And these are guys that have played well. In fact, the player that was the most disappointing one last night on the pitch, Fadli Shas, has been one of JDT's best players in the last 3 months.
Yeah.
So the frustrating bit is, if they could turn up in a league match and they could turn up at the AFC Cup and put on a decent performance, why do they seem to struggle when they don the Malaysian national team jersey? Is it a question of desire? Is it a question of wanting to actually do well? Because when they play for their club, it is absolutely brilliant. Fadli Shas has been one of JDT's best players, but where was he last night?
He looked like a joke player. I mean, there was no understanding. They weren't winning headers. It was the second ball was bouncing, and Nick.
Well, what transpired after last night's result is even more astonishing. Today, just now in the evening, national coach Tan Cheng Ho has dropped all the JDT players. That is 14 JDT players which he has dropped.
Did he drop his reason?
Well, dropped in inverted commas.
Yes. You read between the lines.
Yeah, let him finish that first. Okay,
his reason for dropping all these players is because he wants to give the fans a reason to choose. He says, he claims that a lot of the fans have claimed that previous coaches and also him have been biased in their selection of JDT players. So in order to appease the fans, he's dropped all JDT players. And this is coming from a man who is made up of integrity, who is an honest professional, intent on doing the best he can. And here he has the league champions. Rightly so, he selected 14 players to represent the Malaysian squad. And out of the blue, you drop all of them?
Yeah, okay. You have to read into that how you will.
That press conference is basically telling you something. You have to read between the lines.
I know. But it beggars belief because I understand we have... it's a dead rubber. We have a match against the Lebanon on the 27th in 4 days' time. It's for the Asian Cup, which we can't qualify. But my point is, it's still a FIFA-sanctioned game. You still are obliged to field your best side, right?
Yeah, and the fear right now is Lebanon are no pushovers and they're exactly. A really, really good side. The fear now is to what extent can we go on there and put on a performance? Now, I wouldn't want to be the guy who says that JDT players are the only ones we can depend on. Obviously, there are other decent players in the league that can be called upon. But as you said, Ross, when it comes to international fixtures, there is a responsibility to put out the best side. This is not a friendly match for us to tinker with. This is an actual FIFA A match. And it's against a side that's really, really good in quality. And it's a game that will be watched by many around the globe. And we will be judged by our performance. Mm-hmm. The standard of our football will be judged by our performance. So the quality of our players will be judged. If an AFC A Under-23 championship... If Malaysia's good performance at that tournament was able to draw the interest of multiple parties towards our players, can you imagine what a poor performance in a match like this would do to the credibility of our players on the international stage?
And if Tan Cheng Ho really has withdrawn 14 of his best players, then he has cojones the size of cannonballs.
For a manager to come and do that. Yeah, exactly. I was thinking that to myself. I don't know whether we're allowed to say that on radio.
I think I said it correctly.
Yeah, but come on. If you're going to do that, what is he saying? You know, he's basically, you know, it's a slap in the face, right?
Yeah. Okay, I mean, it's just to put things into perspective. So whilst all this was going on, whilst we were drawing 2-2 with Mongolia, Thailand were drawing 0-0 with Gabon. Gabon, who has Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang of Arsenal in their ranks. Okay, yeah, he wasn't in the squad, right?
But they still had Mario Lemina.
Exactly.
They had another Premier League player in the squad as well.
They ranked 85 in the world, and Thailand won on penalties. I believe it was a penalty shootout after 90 minutes. That's just to put things into perspective.
And the more astonishing thing is, while we are sitting here arguing about our national squad and the players in it for an upcoming dead match against Lebanon, Thailand are going to face Slovakia in the final of that King's Cup tournament. A team with Marek Hamsik, who is not there, but they've got a host of other players. And this is a team that's going to potentially play, you know, in huge tournaments.
And for me, this is the most gutting thing of all, because football fans are not silly. We're knowledgeable. We read, we watch on YouTube highlights of hundreds of games and goals and stuff. And you can see our neighbours are surging. They are not just a few streets ahead of us. They're blocks ahead of us.
Yeah. We are just shooting ourselves in the foot, aren't we? I mean, there is no reason for us to be doing this, you know, calling up players, dropping players, you know. Singing to the tune of the powers that be. You know, it has to be about tactical nous. It has to be about the best players being selected. It has to be about the action on the pitch. Not about club versus country row, especially when we are 178 in the world.
And the frustrating thing is, Ross, that we are better than this, because what we saw on the pitch last night, compared to what we saw with the AFC under-23 boys in China,
agreed.
It shows that we can play good football, we can put aside unnecessary bureaucratic issues and actually focus on what's on the pitch. The problem is we're letting all these unnecessary issues dominate the narrative of Malaysian football. And that's really, really unhealthy for the public image of this sport in the country especially. Last night, there were 10,000 people at the Bukit Jalil Stadium.
Yeah, that's good.
How many do you think will turn up should Malaysia play another friendly tomorrow?
Yeah, 10,000 with Malaysia not winning 10 games prior. 10,000 still showed up to show their support and loyalty.
Yeah.
You know, forget the 2-2 draw. Yes, you know, because it's a new squad, you know, it's a new coach, you know, there's a lot of transition to be done. So maybe he should be given some time. But the only way should have been up should be only to improve on this performance.
Yeah, but
now we're just going back to square one.
It's not rocket science. The tried and tested way of having a successful international side is, A, you must first have a thriving domestic league, right? And we're very much budgeting in that sense. We're still growing our league. Yeah. We're not getting all better, professional yet, right?
We're getting better. And exactly, that was the frustrating part, because league-wise, we're getting better. Development-wise, things are improving. It's not the greatest yet, but it's improving. It's in the right direction. And you've got to commend the powers that be for that, right?
Yes.
But the problem is, while we have all of that progress happening, we shoot ourselves in the foot. This is not a problem of system. This is not a problem of ideas. This is a problem of us just not making use of the best resources we have to produce the best outcomes that we have.
And dictatorship to a certain extent.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Nicholas was saying is the bureaucracy right now and the club versus the country role, it's unnecessary at this point in time. Like you said, Akish, we have the back end is being built. We are making all the right moves in terms of league and all that, facilities, diet, sports science, everything is coming in. But like I say, the end result, if you're going to have something petty as this,
it's so unlike Malaysia to mix politics with sport and religion.
Never.
And this is so unlike them.
It's a big year in football for Malaysia. Right? Yeah. We have the Asian Games coming up, followed by the AFF coming up. You know, all this, so much of unwanted distraction.
Too much pettiness, yeah.
We also have our boys are playing in the AFC under 16, AFC under 19, exactly. all of that in the lead up to the season. So it's a huge, huge year for Malaysian football.
Okay, I mean, just before we leave off this subject, Akia Rashid, we've got to say a few words about him. 18 years old, he's unspoiled yet. He's come on.
The only bright spot.
Well, he showed all the attributes of someone fresh and unafraid.
Fearless.
Yeah. He was dropping shoulders, he was taking players on, he was dribbling.
He was enjoying himself.
Yeah. He was so nice to watch.
And this one, contrary to what a lot of people said after the game last night, saying why didn't he start, I am in full support of Tan Cheng Ho's decision.
Yeah. He's 18.
Starting from the bench. He's 18. We do not want to overexpose a player of this age. And at this point, the only hope I have for Akia is that he keeps developing, goes abroad, and doesn't turn into... I hate to be saying this, but doesn't turn into another Nazmi Faiz. Because Nazmi Faiz Mansour at one point was the highlight of what we had here.
Yeah, sad but true.
Akia has similar potential, needs to go abroad.
All right, well, that's our Malaysian football bit. We're going for a break. These guys need a drink of water. They're a bit heated up at the moment. Back after this.
Hi, I'm KJ, Minister of Youth and Sports. Thank Friday, it's football.
Thank Friday, it's football on BFM 89.9.
Thanks for sticking with us. Gogs, Nicholas and Kishnan in the studio. Also played last night, early this morning. Denmark 1, Panama 0. It was a friendly. Now, England boss Gareth Southgate would have had his emissaries there and they would have been watching that game because Panama's in the same World Cup group as England. What they would have reported back to Mr. Southgate is that this Panama team are a bit physical. They kick out a little bit, as they showed against Denmark. It was a 1-0 winner, Ciro, I think, scored for Denmark. Nice goal. But it was hard fought, and Panama, they pretty much showed how they're going to set the stall out.
Seems like they also have a Corbin Ong in their team.
with the throw-ins. With a major long throw, right? I mean, teams like that, is that the only way to go? Is that how Malaysia should be thinking?
It's, you know, teams like Panama is where players like Dele Alli become extremely important. Because what Dele Alli can do for a team is work within tight spaces and unlock defences. And that's something that England have not been able to do for a long time because they don't have a player of that mold. You think of England, you think of players who are just physically strong, able to power through defences through the flanks. But against teams that park the bus, keep a low defensive line, England need to be able to work their way through a setup like that. And this is the kind of game where England will need Dele Alli to really step it up. Or else, I wouldn't be surprised if... I mean, I know it's a little too early to be talking about it right now, but based on Panama's performance and based on what we've seen of England traditionally at big tournaments, I wouldn't be surprised if England-Panama turns out to be a 0-0.
All right.
I was just about to say.
Yeah. Okay.
It could very easily be that.
So Denmark beat Panama 1-0. Denmark are at the World Cup as well. Nobody talks about Denmark. They're experienced. They've got a spine. They've got a goalkeeper in Schmeichel. They've got good defenders. They got Christian Eriksen playing in that number 10 role.
Oh, yeah.
The guy who scored the goal was Pione Sisto. He's young. He's a striker. I mean, there's no... They won the Euros, remember? Out of nowhere.
And when it mattered the most... I know everyone talks about a lot of exceptional players around the world, but Christian Eriksen deserves a shout for what he has been doing for Spurs and also what he did for Denmark, because in a deciding game where Denmark needed to get 3 points to get them a seat in Brazil, Christian Eriksen stepped up with a hat-trick that night.
Yeah.
This was November last year, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And that's the kind of performance that shows you the quality of that Christian Eriksen has in his bag.
Does Christian Eriksen need to move to a bigger club? Maybe even a different league? Maybe if he was playing for AC Milan or Roma?
Christian Eriksen reminds me of Luka Modric.
Exactly, right? Yeah.
He's got all the same moves and all that. And look how Modric, when he went on to a bigger club.
He could fit into Barcelona. Yeah. He really could. If Iniesta leaves, which is looking extremely likely, he might go to China, then Christian Eriksen could exactly be the kind of player Barcelona needs.
Pulling the strings in midfield.
Mm. And also Kasper Schmeichel, I think he's going to be an integral part of our Denmark campaign. Yeah. When they won the Euros in 92, his father was part of the winning squad, and you could just see that sort of leadership and commanding presence he has at the back. You know, when he came out, that high boot, you know, not many keepers would have thrown themselves in the face of adversity, but he did and really took some damage to his body. But his presence and his shouts from the back are really going to be crucial for Denmark.
All right. Okay, let's talk about England-Holland then. It's a friendly that's happening early tomorrow morning, 3:45 a.m. kickoff. It's being played in the Netherlands. Now, they're under new management, the Dutch. Ronald Koeman, fired from Everton last time, is the new boss in charge. He's got some rebuilding to do. They're talking about Euro 2020 as their next target, right?
Yeah.
I was talking to my Dutch mate on Facebook. I was saying, like, hey, 1-1, probably a draw between Holland and England. And he went, no, we're a lot worse than that. You're giving us too much credit.
I mean, as much as, if you're an England friend, as much as you could be a skeptic, at this point, times are just a lot harder for a Dutch fan. Obviously, they've had a good run of games in recent times. They've won, I think, 5 on the trot. But a large majority of those wins came against sides that were relatively lower in the FIFA rankings. The last time they played a pretty big side, it was France, and they lost 4-0. Mm. And I agree. I think with Holland, the end goal has got to not... To be beyond just victory in this game. It's about Euro 2020.
This is it. All the old guard have gone now. Wesley Sneijder's gone. Robin's gone.
Yeah. Is Van Persie still around?
No, Van Persie's are also retired.
Yeah, the good thing is they're introducing young ones. Kluivert is the one to watch.
Son of Patrick.
He's been really, really good in the Dutch league.
But I think the talent is not really in abundance for Koeman at the moment. It's pretty much scarce. Besides Justin Kluivert, who else does he have? Memphis Depay, who has been doing okay. He has Kevin Strootman, and he also have Giorgio Wijnaldum, who's been in and out of the Liverpool squad. So I think he's really got to dig deep into finding these young talents, you know.
This is the Dutch. They always come up with the quality. Yeah. You know? It's always building them. I assume this is going to be another few years before they have another golden generation. Because, they have to have a dip. Like the Germans before.
Yeah. Their problem is always they just blow up and argue with each other.
Exactly.
At tournaments.
But in losing all these stars like Van Persie and Sneijder and Van der Waart, you know, he's lost so much of experience. That's almost 450 caps between them. So, you know, where is he going to go and find this sort of experience and sort of composed head in crucial moments to make a difference in the game?
It's an interesting thing to see because Italy and the Dutch, they are in a similar situation where they have players who are extremely experienced but are no longer have the legs. But both countries have taken two different direction. While Netherlands has opted to go the young way and go with the young players, Italy has stuck to the experienced guys. Buffon is back in the squad, apparently.
We'll talk about the Italians in a bit. The Dutch will be experimental. They'll be young. Now, as far as England are concerned in this game, the only experimenting that Southgate will do will be at the back because the new faces are James Tarkowski, Alfie Mawson, Nick Pope, possibly to play in goal. You get the impression the England squad is pretty much already picked itself, really, right? Don't you think?
I think goalkeeper-wise, there's still a bit of an issue.
There it's is a question mark, especially after last weekend.
Yes. I don't think there are a lot of question marks in defence. I think it's pretty straight up in terms of who is likely to play. Up front is an issue as well. If Harry Kane isn't fit, which in this situation he isn't, so who will get the nod? We're not sure what kind of system Southgate might use. He could play with a three up front with Vardy, Rashford and Sterling, or he could go for a one with Vardy or Rashford alone.
It sounds like something like that with Dele Alli floating in there. Does anyone think Holland are going to win this, or is England?
Well it's England's game to lose this one, considering the chemistry that England have. You know, all these players, they have played regularly with each other for a long time, and Koeman is just putting together a possible A squad to face England. So it really is Gareth Southgate's game to lose, and I hope that Jamie Vardy will step up to the plate and sort of establish himself in Harry Kane's presence, because he has done so in Leicester colours. He's been so hardworking this season, you know, working off scraps at times, and it's time he takes that to the international stage as well.
All right, brilliant stuff. Holland versus England, Saturday, 3:45 a.m. kickoff. We're going for another break. We'll be back right after this.
Hello, I'm Ossie Ardiles. I won the World Cup, I've been in a Hollywood movie, and I work with Jason Day. But saying this is the most important of them all. Saint Friday is football on BFM 89.9.
Thank Friday, it's football on BFM 89.9.
Thanks for sticking with us. Gogolin, Nicholas Arnell and Keishnan in the studio. If you want to tweet the guys, it's at BFM Radio on Twitter. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We are found on Facebook, Football on BFM. Give the page a like. Now, a whole bunch of friendlies happening tonight. Kicking off at midnight, interesting game. World Cup hosts Russia take on Brazil. Probably favourites for the actual World Cup. Now, Russia, coached by Stanislav Cheshesov, he's had like a couple of major withdrawals. I know a couple of defenders, Viktor Vasin and
Zikia,
are out. Now, he's also lost Alexander Kokorin, probably one of their go-to players. Yep. He would have been at the World Cup. He's a forward. It's a cruciate ligament injury. He's out.
He's out of the World Cup, right?
Yeah. He's out for sure. Definitely. So are the other two defenders. Yeah. They're all cruciates. It doesn't look good. I mean, going into this, Russia are not very strong at all.
They have not looked good in the last couple of years. Even at the Euros the last time out, they weren't that great. And this time around, obviously they got through to the World Cup by virtue of being hosts. Because if they were forced to qualify for it by merit,
they probably wouldn't have made
it. They probably wouldn't have made it. Definitely, judging by their recent performances, and it's going to be a really and it's important for them to start playing games of this caliber. So I think this is a good it's a good opportunity for them to really put themselves against probably one of the best teams in the world, if not the best at the moment right now, and test and see what they've got to fix and what immediate short-term measures can they take before the World Cup squad is announced. The only salvation for Russia is that they still have the likes of Alen Zhagoev up front, who has always been dependable for them when it comes to getting goals or working his socks and linking up with midfielders. So he will be key tonight. But come on, I really do not see a way Brazil are going to drop the ball in this one. They've been sensational.
Okay, a few of the Russia Russian results. They had a friendly against Dynamo Moscow, the Russian national side. Yeah, beat them 3-0. They beat Korea Republic in October of last year, 4-2. They drew 1-1 with Iran. They lost 1-0 to Argentina. Their last international was a 3-3 draw with Spain. But it was an experimental Spanish side. Yeah.
Even the one against Argentina as well.
This is a game of high importance, especially to the fans, because it's firstly going to be in their new stadium, and there are 60,000 fans which are reportedly coming to watch this game. Now, we all know what Russia Russian fans did at the last Euros. So I think one of the main concerns would be security in this
yeah,
match.
Yeah, good point.
You know, reports have said that a lot of the hooligans are able to smuggle in the likes of marijuana, heroin, and cocaine if they have the right prescription. So these are some of the issues that this Russian security are facing on the back of their doping scandals and a lot of the other issues that have beleaguered the team.
Please, so let there be no problems. Yeah, the World Cup's, yeah, what, 80-something days away? All right, as far as Brazil are concerned, Tite is in charge. He is doing great. They play in a 4-1-4-1 formation. No Neymar, obviously, but Gabriel Jesus. Yeah, exactly.
Compare this Brazil squad to the one that played at the World Cup 4 years ago. Yeah. There's so much more depth to this team.
This
right
one's
now
got so much pace. Yeah, yeah.
The other one had Oscar.
That one had Fred as
Fred
well.
Fred as well.
Yeah, yeah. Fred.
The guy.
That's why they got tonked.
Yeah.
Ellison, the Roma goalkeeper, will captain Brazil tonight. It's a game in Moscow. It's a midnight kickoff. It should be very, very interesting. Of course, Brazil are in Group E of the World Cup, along with Switzerland, Costa Rica, and Serbia.
And I just want to mention this, because Brazil, for the longest times, have been known for their attacking-minded players, right? Everyone talks about attacking-minded players. Goalkeeping situation-wise, they've always had an issue. Dida wasn't the greatest, and even after Dida left, they've always had issues replacing him. Julio Cesar came in and out.
Yeah,
you know, players, Donny was there, but they were never able to produce a genuinely world-class goalkeeper.
It's only right.
Right now, they have two.
Well, this
they've
is
got
it.
Ederson and Ellison for the first time in such a long while. The Brazilians,
it's unheard of to have
a
Brazilian goalkeeper.
Two exceptional goalkeepers.
Just when you thought the football gods were being fair, they're not.
Well, you know, back to this 4-1-4-1 formation, he's basically accommodated all the attacking players though, right?
Yeah.
Because he has such a, I mean, so much of talent out there. I mean, look at who's coming in, Coutinho.
They're talking about, I mean, it's a big game for Coutinho. He needs to cement his place in there.
It's not even a bang into for a place on the squad.
Exactly.
The
fact that we're saying Coutinho needs to cement his place.
Well, when you have
enough.
The likes of Paulinho, which is doing so well, you know, you've got so much of competitions in midfield as well.
But this Brazilian team is like, when they come to the World Cup, and because of Brazilian teams of late, and the weight of expectation sits on their shoulders. And when you have to play a certain way when you coach the Brazilian team, right? You cannot have a defensive Brazilian team.
Well, the only way it can go wrong is if Neymar starts to throw his toys out the pram.
He's
going to
be fit, right, for the World Cup?
He will be fit for
I don't think he'll be starting most games now because of that. And I think that's actually a blessing in disguise for Tite.
He's a talisman. What are you talking
about? The one that I'm genuinely excited to watch is actually Firmino. Because I think he has been one of the best players in the Premier League this year. Very, very underrated. The effort that he does off the ball, the work that he puts in off the ball,
I think he'll score 5 no-look goals.
No-look goals.
Russia against Brazil then. Midnight kickoff. At 1 a.m. is Norway versus Australia. This is actually happening in London. The Socceroos are under new management. Bert van Marwijk. The
is
Dutchman.
It Marwijk or Marwijk?
Marwijk.
I have no idea.
Yeah. He's in charge anyway. Apparently they're not going back to Australia for a farewell friendly before they sail off to the World Cup. They're now going to be based in Europe. They're going to start honing the squad. I mean, this Van Marwijk has a lot to do here.
The latest news is quite literally today. Is that they've brought in Mark van Bommel as the assistant manager.
Yep, his son-in-law.
Yeah.
Let me add.
So that is a power duo indeed, similar to what Roberto Martinez was having at one point in Belgium with Thierry Henry by his side.
So with Mark van Bommel, you're going to get a lot of guys getting sent off.
They need that steel in midfield, definitely.
But with Australia this time, you haven't got your Harry Kewells, you haven't got your Mark Viduka's and all that. Instead, you've got your Aaron Moyes, your Matt Ryan's, your Matthew Leckie's, your Trent Sainsbury, Tom Juric.
Yeah.
Tim Cahill?
Problem
still.
The fact that Australia are still depending on Tom Cahill is a bit of a problem. Tim Cahill is a bit of a problem because I think they have quality in other aspects of the pitch. Midfield, you've got Aaron Moy. Defensively, they've got players who can pull the strings. They've got Matt Ryan in goal as well, who's a pretty decent goalkeeper. Australia's main problem lies in scoring goals. The fact that they needed Tim Cahill to rescue them against Syria when they played the qualifiers last year.
They labored to that one.
They're still very much depending on him. They've got Robbie Cruz, who plays in the second division of German football, but he isn't a your out-and-out goal scorer either. Back then, they had Viduka, but right now, I really can't name a proper Australian goal scorer. The positive one is Australian former Negrissi Milan foreign player Andrew Nabu is reportedly in this squad.
Wow.
Right
after
now.
His heroin.
So he left Negrissi Milan, went back to the A-League.
Rejected by Negri.
Released by Negrissi Milan, went back to the A-League, played for a couple of years there, has now signed for Urawa Reds in Japan, and is in the World Cup. Is in contention for the World Cup squad right now. So, I'm genuinely just looking forward to seeing Nabu play if he's given the chance.
How do you feel, N9FA? all right, well, Australian reports from Oslo suggests that Van Marwijk has been demanding a crisp, high-paced passing style. So, it'd be interesting to see. He's got not a lot of time to work with pretty average set of players, it has to be said.
He's actually coming into this Australian squad with
a
decent record. He left Saudi Arabia because he could not agree terms and conditions with the FA. But you got to see, he led Saudi Arabia to automatic qualification and they only finished 1 point behind Japan in the group stage. So that says a lot about his coaching credentials, already a proven achiever in the World Cup as well. So I think he's going to play a different brand of football because Australia now, they are doing away with this Tim Cahill generation and trying to absorb more under-23 players, which is also another cause of their problems. They do not have many youth players coming into the ranks. So Marwijk is tasked to do that, and I think they will be playing a different brand of football as opposed to Postelogu.
All right, be interesting. That one is a 1 a.m. kickoff early tomorrow morning. Now, two of the World Cup favourites are going head to head at 3:45 a.m. Germany versus Spain. In typical German fashion, the coach, Jogi Löw, comes out and he goes, "Oh, Spain, they're one of the top favourites for the Cup this year." And you're just going, "No."
Have you seen the squad depth of this German side?
Yeah. Let's start with Spain. The Chelsea trio are not called up. Morata, Fabregas, and I forget who, there's another one, not called up. Diego Costa has been recalled.
Costa, Silva, Isco up front.
Yeah.
4-3-3.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a formidable Spain squad, right? I mean, no matter how you look at it.
It is, and I think they have the most important thing for Spain. I know everyone is judging Spain based on their performance in the last two tournaments, 2016 and 2014, which wasn't great considering the period of domination they had before that.
Yeah.
But the most important thing for Spain and the most positive thing for them right now is I think they have moved away from the weight of expectation that was placed on them after that period. Yeah. That period, they had the whole tiki-taka football going on. But I think the current generation of Spanish players are of a different mold. I'm not saying completely different from the passing fluid style, but it's slightly different. And I think the expectation, the culture in the country has evolved to a certain extent. And they would be able to go to these tournaments with less pressure on their shoulders. And in a situation like that, they could actually be a pretty dangerous team.
Yeah, Julen Lopetegui, his results have been great. Pedro is the other Chelsea player not called up. All right, well, the Germans, they are standard as you were. They've got the likes of Jerome Boateng, Matt Hummels, Thomas Müller, Mesut Ozil, Toni Kroos.
Leroy Sané.
They're all starting. they're all starting. Don't you just want to go listen?
Timo Werner is the new, what do you call it? What's the guy?
Striker.
Yeah, what?
Red Bull.
Yeah.
RB. Timo Werner.
Yeah, Timo Werner.
You know, if everyone has got to watch, everyone has got to, if you want to understand what's happening with German football and why they are where they are right now, you've got to read this book called Das Reboot by Raphael Honigstein, because it tells you every single effort, every single initiative they took after Euro 2000 to get to where they are right now. This is not the product of sudden development.
Exactly.
This is what strategic development exactly is, and they're reaping the benefits of it.
So do you
right
reckon
now.
If we bought each copy and got it translated and gave it to the FAM, do you reckon, to be fair...
It has to be translated spot on. It can't be lost in translation.
Yeah,
you know?
To be fair, excerpts of that book were used in drafting the blueprint for NFDP, the National Football Development Program. Correct. Lim Tiong Kim worked
closely. He was part of the setup at that time.
I'm just gutted. I'm not going to see it in my lifetime. That's all.
Not yours either, mate. Leave it to the young ones.
This German team, I mean, their stats, they're top of the FIFA rankings. They're on a 21-match unbeaten run. They won all 10 games in their qualification. Only the second team ever to do that. That's 100% qualifying record. They scored 43 goals in qualification. They broke all records doing it. And you could say they're probably a young... The thing about Jogi Löw and how well they've evolved is they forever look like they're still developing.
Yeah, exactly. Right? They're consistently producing new generation of players. And the reason for that is... the German FA created a blueprint 14, 15 years ago, and that blueprint is continuously updated and evolved across time, and it's disseminated to every single club in the German football pyramid, from your Bundesligas to your second division to your third division. So each club needs to use that blueprint and embed that blueprint into their own philosophy and then produce. So when your Bayern Munich's produce a player, when your Dortmund's produce a player, when your Leverkusen's produce a player, they are all of a similar mold. So when they go and report for under-21 duty, for under-19 duty, they assimilate into the system perfectly, which is why you see under-19 boys playing, under-21 boys coming into the German senior team and just, you know, having no issues with adapting into the squad. And that's the incredible beauty of this German squad right now.
It is as close to football utopia as you can get now in the modern world. That and Pep Guardiola's tiki-taka style. That's about it. In a nutshell, that is it. All right, Germany-Spain then. Saturday, 3:45 a.m. kickoff. We're going for our final break. We'll be back right after this.
Hi, I'm Kevin Keegan, and this is Thank Friday It's Football, and I will love it if you keep listening. Love it.
Thank Friday It's Football on BFM 89.9.
Hey, thanks for sticking with us. Portugal take on Egypt tomorrow morning in Zurich, 3:45 a.m. kickoff. The fact they play in Zurich means that those FIFA bigwigs will get to leave the office and watch two or possibly the best players in the world go head-to-head. Well, you know.
You really just had to say that, didn't you, Ross?
But it's true, right? This game features Cristiano Ronaldo, who we all know about, of course, and the man of the moment, Mohamed Salah. He's leading all the scoring charts. He's on his way to pick up the Ballon d'Or, or the goal scorer, top goal scorers award. What happens if Egypt beat Portugal in this one?
Ronaldo to sulk for at least a week. I think maybe more.
Until the World Cup, mate.
Because I think he's going to take this as a personal battle. He always likes this duel.
He does, doesn't he?
He always looks fired up when he has someone else which is almost on the same par as him. And Salah is definitely on the same par, if not more, at this moment. So Ronaldo is going to be fired up. He'll want to take all the free kicks. He'll want to be at the center of everything. And I think that will sort of give him a bit more a pressure, because if he misses, you can see it in his reaction. He immediately, you know, he's agitated and he starts shouting. Well, total contrast to Salah.
He's a man for the big games. If you remember when PSG were playing Madrid, everyone was saying that, you know, it's the end of an era. Neymar is going to upstage him. Next thing you know, he single-handedly takes Real Madrid.
He lives for the big game.
Similarly, I think about 2-3 years ago when Portugal played Sweden in that crucial World Cup qualifier, and everyone was saying that it was a battle of Ibrahimovic and Ronaldo. Ronaldo scored a hat-trick that night.
And okay, well, from what we've seen of Mo Salah this year, you've got to say his temperament is there. He's been doing it for 30 games now at the highest level. He's single-handedly carried Egypt through.
That, Ross, that is the greatest part of the story right now, because You can talk about all the ability in this Portugal team. They've got quality all over the pitch. But what they don't have, or what they have that is not as big or not as strong as what Egypt have, is the team spirit and the squad morale right now. It's at an all-time high.
Yeah.
The fact that they got to the World Cup, the fact that they have one of the best players in the world right now within their team. Egyptian football has waited for this moment for decades, Ross.
Yep.
And they're finally here. And this is an opportunity for them to stamp their authority on the international stage. So Portugal better turn up tonight.
Mo Salah scores every 85.5 minutes in England's top flight. He is currently on course to hit 35 league goals this season. Cristiano Ronaldo, if you watched him in the first month of La Liga, you would have said to yourself, oh, he's lost it a bit, hasn't he?
I think he went through a spell there. But
it's a slow start. He has now scored 18 goals in his last 9 La Liga games.
Bleacher Report released a goals chart, a chart showcasing the top 4 scorers in La Liga and the progression that they had from the beginning of the season to where they are right now. Ronaldo's was very stagnant in the beginning of the season.
Then shot up.
And then in the last 3 months, it's just been zoop all the way up.
Amazing. These two, they're just worth any entrance fee. Portugal-Egypt then is a 3:45 a.m. kickoff. We should mention, Egypt are in Group A of the World Cup along with host nation Russia, Saudi and Uruguay.
They have a really strong chance.
I fancy Egypt.
Round of 16 indeed.
So fancy them. Portugal are in Group B, along with Iran, Morocco and Spain. You've got to fancy the Portuguese to follow Spain, although
Iran.
The dark horse is there.
Probably the best Asian side. Carlos Queiroz, the man behind that. All right, very quickly, Argentina take on Italy. You mentioned it earlier. Italians are still leaning on the old guard. Apparently, Buffon has rescinded his retirement. Yeah. He's now back. He's captaining the side.
I think he was asked to come back, right?
Well, he's back either way. He's also answering critics because some of the professionals are going, well, the thing is, they've got Donnarumma waiting in the wings, right?
Yeah, but Donnarumma has also been hot and cold.
Hot and cold, yeah.
This season.
But this game doesn't have Dybala, no Icardi.
Yeah, and I was about to just say that because it's absolutely ridiculous that Argentina have the ability to just drop players like Icardi and Dybala. It goes to show the wealth of talent.
But I would still take Dybala. I mean, Higuain is starting.
Jorge Sampaoli, who's the Argentine boss, tried to explain the fact that, I mean, Paulo Dybala, who plays for Juventus, is hot at the moment, red hot form. Apparently, he doesn't play to the Argentina system. And for him to enter the squad, they have to play a whole new system. So they reckon they got a whole set of players they can just move in and out. But all right, Argentina, Italy, 3:45 a.m. France versus Colombia is a 4 o'clock kickoff. France have called up Wassim Ben Yedder.
I wonder why.
Of Sevilla.
I think more interestingly, we're all wondering what colour Pogba will dye.
He's already done it though, right?
It's blue and yellow.
It looks like a birthday cake.
Yeah.
A frozen birthday cake.
Good on him.
Yeah, I'm glad he put time in. Important stuff.
But the interesting bit about this game is Didier Deschamps publicly acknowledged that Pogba has not been playing well. He said at the press conference that
exactly.
I don't think Pogba himself will be happy. And that public acknowledgement, it has to fire him up. Because the argument for Pogba at United is he's not given the freedom to play the way he wants to. And the argument is that it's Mourinho's fault and the club's fault for not bringing out the best in him. But if he also doesn't turn up for France, then it will put a dent in that argument and it will revive the argument that this is a Pogba issue, not a Mourinho
issue. But
that
comes back to the point that players like this also need game time in their own, like you said, position and everything. You can't just switch it off and switch it on again for the guy.
But I'm sorry, if you're 85 million and
yeah, it's 85 million.
You're talking about 6 inches in the midfield line difference, right?
Well, I mean, to be fair, Deschamps builds his team around Pogba.
Deschamps has dropped Karim Benzema and Aymeric Laporte.
Yeah, Deschamps is a manager that doesn't mess around. So, you know, if let's say Pogba doesn't show up, he won't hesitate to drop him. And Pogba's position will be under severe scrutiny because the World Cup is barely...
And France are one of red-hot favourites also for the World Cup.
Yeah. Okay, that's it. We're nearly out of time. So, let's get a prediction or two.
It's time for the big weekend shout brought to you by MyChris.
Gogs, you're first. What's your big shout?
Well, I'm going with Egypt to get something against Portugal.
Ooh, nice one. Okay, Keish?
I'm going to go for England to get a comfortable win in Amsterdam over Netherlands.
How is that a big shout, mate?
I think it's big given the context of England's squad at the moment.
And Nick, Malaysia to beat Lebanon. Did you say that? Is that you?
I'll say not a chance. I will, however, go for Colombia to cause an upset over France. They've got Falcao, they've got James Rodriguez back in the team. Pogba's not playing really well. Martial's in and out. So Colombia to upset France.
The Big Weekend Shout is brought to you by MyChris, connecting people and business with a personal touch.
That's it. We're out of time, so I'm going to say thanks to the guys. Thank you, Gogolin.
Cheers.
Thank you, Keishan.
Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you, Nicholas.
Enjoy the football.
Indeed. Back on Monday. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank Friday. It's football every Friday at 8 p.m. on BFM 89.9. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.